Right, thanks for coming on, lads. Appreciated. We are going to be talking about fundamental nutrition concepts, and then also the following session will not be publicly available, like the start of this, and that's on the applied principles that we'll be talking about, the applied nutrition principles for the Nutrition for Fitness Professionals program. So if you want to get access to that, you're going to have to get the Nutrition for Fit Pros program. If you've already done the cert, don't worry about it. But if you're a fitness professional, you haven't done the cert, you're interested in nutrition coaching, definitely grab this program and check it out. So that's the shout out and selling out of the way. We have five topics we're going to be talking about. They are the different modalities of tracking versus non-tracking versus meal plans and other tools that are used and we're commonly seeing at the moment. Then we have why nutritional literacy matters most before choosing a modality. Then we have the benefits and who of each of these modalities would potentially serve, as well as some of the cons associated with them. Then the drawbacks and who should be avoiding these and why. And then when and how each of these could be used in different phases for an individual as well.
First topic, the different modalities of tracking versus non-tracking versus meal plans. Now we start there, gents.
Yep. It's rock and roll.
Beautiful. So I personally think we need to do a bit of a rewind here and go back to what we're actually trying to achieve. So as health professionals, we're trying to enhance or support the health and well-being of our clients. So what is health? Well, health involves lots of different facets. It includes physical health, financial health, social health, psychological health, just to name a few, right? So when we're thinking about diet, really any manipulation or recommendation or guidance that we provide as the health professional, any guidance that we provide, if it improves any facet of total health without seeing detriment to another area of total health, and the total like average of across all facets of total health is improved over time, then in theory, you know, we're improving a client's health. Now, this doesn't have to just be about fat loss and improving the micronutrition adequacy of a diet, for example. You know, if we're talking about psychological health, we might help a client move away from dichotomous thinking when it comes to food. That's going to improve their psychological health. We might help a client be more comfortable with consuming social meals and not being feeling guilty about that, or also, you know, maybe not be in a position where they're avoiding those social occasions due to fear of, you know, how they might navigate it within the context of quote unquote healthy eating. So I think the first thing to do really is establish that there are many different ways we can improve someone's health through diet. It's not just about fat loss and, you know, nutrient adequacy or what have you. But if we were to kind of shoehorn those two areas, or maybe not shoehorn, but just if we were to try and focus on those areas, we want to start off with fundamental principles or behaviors. So, you know, we look at common traits of health-seeking diets, typically high in plant fiber, very varied in terms of food selection. It provides adequate calories for human function, health, and activity, so adequate energy. And that's just sort of the surface level stuff. If we're looking at more of a fat loss goal, we have a degree of consistent caloric intake or calorie intake restriction that facilitates the principle of a calorie deficit, which then yields those fat loss outcomes. So they're the habits, the behaviors, or the principles that we want to try and tick off, depending on the goal, of course. But typically, if we're talking healthy eating and a bit of weight loss in the mix there, it's going to sound something or look like something like that. Now, so the principles, then we want to look at the method. Okay, now the method can be anything that ticks those boxes has the potential to be the right tool for the job. We want to think about them. We want to look at the client. We want to look at their situation, for example, and various other factors that are going to help us determine whether that is an appropriate approach for those clients. But at the end of the day, if it helps them improve those behaviors, adhere to those behaviors and principles, then, you know, the outcome is going to be the same. And talking to tracking versus non-tracking, they're just tools in the toolkit, and it's about applying the right tool for the job. Sometimes tracking is going to be the desirable approach, sometimes it's not. So, you know, if we start off with principles and then we fit the method or the strategy with the client, we're going to be in a better position.
Yeah, I think you're right. Like, like you said, there are principles, there are methods, right? And when we think about that, though, like the amount of methods that there are to get to this, you know, to achieve the principle that we're after, there are a lot, which is hard. Where it's like we're trying to find the, I guess, the commonalities with the methods that we would recommend. That, you know, they've got those things in common that you said are health promoting at the end of the day. We're not here to recommend things like keto, even though it may fit someone's lifestyle. Because when we think about someone's health overall and what's going to be applicable, like when we look at the individual diets that people could be following, the commonalities such as plants and protein and certain things like that are what, you know, research has shown that is going to benefit someone the most. So even though there are a lot of modalities or methods that could apply to those principles, we also want to make sure those methods are, you know, best by, I guess, you know, evidence-based research too, you know, that's actually going to improve someone's health, that's not coming up with fringe methods or things that could be, you know, that we see on Instagram or TikTok and things like that, that are, they may promote someone's health in the short term, but in the long term, it may actually not be that beneficial for them too.
I think this is where we've got to think about total health, and we've got to be critical of the flow on or side effects of particular methods or strategies. So yes, you know, keto in theory can work just as well as a, you know, sort of dietary guideline style calorie restricted diet with, you know, an even macronutrient distribution. It can work closely as well from a weight loss perspective, but provided calories are controlled the same manner. But I would make the argument that even though that is the case, you're more likely going to see side effects and negative consequences from, say, for example, a keto approach, because it has certain characteristics that, you know, bring an element of risk. For example, keto typically demonizes carbohydrates, okay? So all of a sudden we're going down the route of foods being good or bad. We're demonizing particular foods, and when we consume those, we might view ourselves as going off track or off plan or off the bandwagon. We're creating this dichotomous mindset towards food. The other thing is, because we are, you know, whilst it can be done in a health-seeking way, it's just going to be practically more difficult to consume an adequate amount of plant fiber if you're following a ketogenic diet. And this is something to also consider. That could be a potential negative side effect. Then if we bring in athletic endeavors, exercise performance, and those sort of things, by following a ketogenic diet, we are also yielding a side effect there. So even though fundamentally from a weight loss perspective, both a keto diet and a dietary guideline style approach can work just as well, you don't get those theoretical negatives or as many of them, or they're not as likely with the more dietary guideline style approach. So yes, I see what you're saying there, Tyson. You want to think more long-term, you want to think more. And I feel like people just apply approaches, but don't actually think for a second, hey, well, what's going to happen as a product of these things? What are the potential negative side effects? How could this affect someone else's total health? Again, keto, you can't have carbs. Okay, so what's that mean for social meals? Okay. People are going to might be fearful. Hey, I can't go and socialize with my friends because we're going, you know, they go to places where there's the meals contain carbs. Like how many keto restaurants are there and how many of your friends actually will go? We might see social isolation from these as an example of how total health might suffer.
Yeah. And that's why we still look at that overall. Like I said, you know, there's all those facets of health do matter when applying something like this, right? So I guess when we think about that, and we do think about the methods when it comes to tracking versus non-tracking, or meal plans, whatever that is, when we think about I guess the commonalities they have together, which you mentioned before, with, like, you know, I think you and I would agree on a lot of this stuff, like, you know, things like plants matter, fiber matter, getting a certain amount of protein matter, whether it is going to be tracking or not, or meal plans, we want to include those things that, you know, just across the board that we know are good for you. And there's no demonization of, again, a macronutrient, a certain food group, anything like that, because at the end of the day, again, whether it be short-term or long-term, we want to apply those things that are going to contribute to overall health, right?
Absolutely. There are common traits of health-seeking diets. There are common traits of calorie-conscious diets, and we should seek to have them present regardless of whether we're going to track variables or whether we're going to adopt a non-tracking approach.
Mm. So obviously with that, then, we know there's tracking and non-tracking and like meal plans. I think everyone knows there are those three categories, but if we were to think about, if you were to choose any of those categories or what they involve, like, you know, plants would be first, obviously, within them. So when we say plants, like, Mac, give us a bit of an idea when, like, when you would say a recommendation of plants, what is that coming from you?
If someone was to sort of ask me that question, I would say, okay, well, let's define plants first and foremost. So when I say the word plants, I'm referring to fruits and vegetables. All fruits and vegetables, they're all grain. Okay. None of them are off the table. All fruits and vegetables. And then in terms of how to apply that, I would say, hey, you know, most of your main meals aim to include at least about a fist-sized serving of fruits and or vegetables, at least a fist-sized serving. If you include some in your snacks, then that's a bonus too. And by doing that, you know, that's one way we can ensure the foundation of the diet or promote the foundation of the diet being comprised of plants. We also have other models like thinking about protein and plants first. So protein and plants in there being first and foremost. So when we build meals, when we order off menus, we're prioritizing these ingredient categories. We also have other things like the plate model as well.
Yeah. And like, again, that will be whether you're going to be tracking food using something like MyFitnessPal or whatever you're going to be using, whether you're not going to be tracking, or again, even getting a meal plan from someone, you want to ensure that you're getting a sufficient amount of plants. And like you said, you know, that would be a fist or two fistful sizes at every meal between fruits and veggies across the board, whether you like whatever implementation you're going to choose, veggies are a must and usually would come first in that diet.
Yeah, a very strong common trait among health-seeking, calorie-conscious diets is that plant fiber, plants are a predominant component of the diet in the meal.
Yeah. And like you're just saying fruits and veggies, like would you be also, like for me personally, I would include legumes and whole grains within that too. Obviously, you know, they would contain probably a little bit more higher calorie content than veggies, let's say, but they still do contribute to overall as a plant matter, and then also adding sufficient fiber, which will also be helping with hunger and health too.
Yeah, there's a bit of gray area there in my mind. And I would agree with you, they do actually, like I think of whole grain fiber and fiber from legumes as plant fiber. Okay. Mm. If we look at the dietary guidelines, legumes are lobbed in with vegetables.
Yeah.
So they kind of included there. Really my approach from a practical coaching perspective is to say, you know, I do like to differentiate them and say, okay, so whole grains and legumes, they fit in the carbs category, but I will adjust that approach depending on the client, like the level that they're at. And if they just need to eat healthier and they're, you know, consuming heaps of legumes and thinking it's vegetables or heaps of potato and thinking it's vegetables, I'm never going to pull them up on it, because if they're coming from a place of 2, 4, and 20 meat pies for breakfast, then I'm not going to, you know, kind of get in the way of them feeling that positivity.
Yeah,
I'm
all about legumes and potatoes being vegetables, because they are. If we're splitting hairs, they just have a higher carbohydrate profile.
Yeah, but I think there's also like the other perspective of, okay, they've got a higher carbohydrate content, they've got a higher calorie density, therefore they should be placed in the carbohydrate dense category. I also see that perspective as being valid as well. And I think for certain instances, like it sort of depends. Like if someone had either approach and came to me with either approach, to be honest, I probably wouldn't move them from what they're already doing. Because I just don't see value in causing that confusion for them or that effort cost or any, you know, you don't want to try and make people feel like they've stuffed up, sort of thing. And I think this is one of these instances where it's not a stuff up. It should never be viewed as a stuff up. Hey, you're including legumes and potatoes in your diet. Like, who cares what category you put them in? If you're including them, that's a positive thing. That should never be viewed or interpreted as a stuff up.
Ideally, we're trying to get, like, when we, like, obviously you said plants, which is fruits and veggies. And again, you know, that fine line between whole grains, legumes, potatoes, and stuff like that. If someone is getting those things in, it's more of a good thing than it is not, obviously. You know, we don't want to push people away from, oh no, they're carbohydrate heavy or calorie dense. Like, at the end of the day, those things are still going to benefit to an overall positive health. And again, because of the fiber, the nutrients, things contained in them, they're still going to obviously help with hunger, satiety, all those things too.
Yeah, I think,
yeah, absolutely.
Also, though, like, I, one thing that I'd add, Mac mentioned it before, is like, I rather than not viewing things as a stuff up, I would just rather create a safe space for them to fail, and then like a safe space for them to take objective feedback on positively and constructively. Because if someone's coming to you and they genuinely don't know about this stuff, part of the experience will be they want to learn from you at times, you know, about this stuff and develop their literacy. And so as long as you're not shaming them and talking down to them in the process, and you're just like, look, you know, you're just learning this and you're supportive of it, and you say thing, you know, if they say something like, oh, you know, this is a fruit or this is a veggie and stuff, or like, you know, this is a grain or this is a carb, oh, well, it's not technically a vegetable. That information, depending on how it's delivered, like obviously it could be really negative, so don't deliver it in a negative way. But if it's in a supportive manner that's just helping them learn for the sake of helping them learn about what that objective information is as well, that can be quite useful for them. So that way they have the tools, you know, down the track, long term, for the rest of their lives as well. in terms of how to navigate, you know, food decisions, all that kind of stuff. So I would sort of, me personally, I would lean to providing education in a safe space for them to fail forwards, but still holding some objective truths at times, and maintaining that, just so that way they are developing their literacy, and sort of not to the point where like we're just being, you know, 24/7 cheerleaders for them without them then learning what the actual things are. I say this because I know where Matt comes from, because he sees a lot of people being like shamed for like the smallest things. And so that's definitely not okay. So it's like, don't correct people and be a dick in the correction. Like, do it from a place of genuinely caring, so that way you can help them. But you know, if we can help them learn, you know, these things, then it's great at the same time.
Going on from that, right, we've got our plans, which is going to be our foundation. And then secondly, like I think we agree, our ingredients, it would be a protein at every meal too. Ideally, you know, some sort of protein.
And most and meals.
Most meals, yeah. All right.
Because you don't want people to feel like they've failed if they miss a meal of protein. Like, and it's not really going to make that much difference anyway.
No, exactly. Right. But the more we can start to get people thinking about those two main things at each meal is going to start to push people in the right direction. So when we think about having protein at every meal, again, you know, whether you are someone who is tracking or non-tracking, like, you know, we can either use the palm size serving, you know, get an idea about what that kind of looks like. But I personally think, on the tracking side of things, it helps people get an idea about what a serving of protein actually looks like a serving of quality protein. You know, they could be like, oh yeah, it's palm size serving. But that's not always so measurable to always actually look at all the time. So I personally think when people follow the tracking approach at a start to get an idea about what does 100 grams of, you know, protein look like, which will be of 20 grams of actually quality protein. So they can start to get an idea of like, okay, if that's on my plate, I know I'm getting a good size serving of protein. And also differentiating between, you know, people still think peanuts are protein, or, you know, lower quality source of protein versus what actually is protein. I think that's an important thing that can come from either their tracking side of things, or, you know, if it's a meal plan, I'm assuming someone's going to give them a good adequate quality protein in that. Or if you are non-tracking, even, you know, having I guess like a cheat sheet to see, like, you know, this is what 25 grams of protein would look like in a meal, whether it be coming from a non animal source, whether it be coming from an animal source, or again, like a combination of non-animal and animal source together type of thing.
I think before Matt goes, one thing that I'll say is I used to really underestimate I was quite naive with like how gentle I assumed. And my position was on like just plants and protein. So like Mac and I were like, plants, protein, it's harmless. And it was probably like 18 months ago, 24 months ago, we were talking, and it was like, oh, I've actually had some clients that are like stressing out because they didn't even get plants and protein. So I know before Mac, when you were saying, oh, like, you know, even if they miss a bit of protein, it's not the end of the world. I think like that's an important principle to include, because we think, given that it's such a, I think, you know, once you develop your literacy to a certain point, you're aware of the benefits, as well as like, you know, how important consistency is, and that one meal is not the end of the world and all that kind of stuff, that we're not going to sweat it, but we forget that like the average client may sweat something like that as well. And sometimes lose sight, you know, just from our own perspective.
Helping people understand that, you know, the outcomes that they're trying to achieve through their diet is not a game of single meals or single days even, or even single weeks. And rather it's, you know, your health, your body composition is really the culmination of your habitual choices and nutrition behaviors over a long span of time. And one thing that, like, you know, I've observationally noticed in my time working in the nutrition industry that's become quite clear to me, and strongly clear, is that those who really do get quote unquote great results and tend to do a better job of sort of fitting their long-term is they have health-seeking values, and they recognize that if their overall approach is health-seeking, then they're not going to stress out about whether they had their protein oats in the morning but didn't put protein in it because they ran out of protein powder and their order for bulk nutrients in a marathon time, for example. You know, and they're more focused on the big picture of, is my health, my diet, and my lifestyle, is that overall health seeking, rather than stressing about the tiny little things, you know, having that averages over time. Because anything in nutrition can be approached in a dichotomous all or nothing manner, even protein and plants. And it's ironic because, you know, flexible dieting, it's called flexible dieting, but it can become anything but flexible depending on how you approach it. you know, track these three numbers to the nearest gram. If I don't track it, all hell breaks loose. This is not flexible dieting. This is rigid dieting with a different label on it. You hear me?
I think that's also like, you know, coming back to that, this will apply to a topic we're talking about later on, like who would benefit this and who wouldn't. But again, like, you know, the people who are preaching the flexible dieting approach, and like you said, you know, oh, you got to eat within 5 grams, you got to do this. And it comes to that black and white mentality or the all or nothing mentality. And it's like, look, at the end of the day, we also want to make this as easy as possible, because when it's easier, you know, when it adds to your life versus consumed your life, and it's not, you know, it's not on your mind 24/7, it actually is quite easy to add these things in, you know. So, and it's like, when we go to down the tracking approach, if you are someone like, I know this was me when I first started tracking, if you do have that neurotic tendency where you have to aim for perfection, or you think everything needs to be, you know, perfect, or again, all hell's gonna break loose, then that's something you also have to be aware of, like, for yourself, and also communicate with your coach if you do know that you are that type of person. Because again, if they're like, oh yeah, well, I'll just teach a flexible dieting, we're just going to go down this road, it could be a slippery slope where it puts you into a bad position, even worse than you were before. Because there are definitely people who have fallen to the approach of, you know, oh, I'm going to start getting healthier, and they get too stuck in the numbers, they get too obsessed with that, and it actually creates a worse relationship with food versus when they even started in the first place. You know, they may have been overeating, things like that, but they didn't have that obsession with food that they now have due to, again, whether it be neurotic tendencies or what they've been taught is just like the bad way to go about tracking if they were to go down that flexible dieting route too.
Yeah, I think, throw my hat in the ring here, the way I'd order it is non-tracking would be first. It'd probably carry the least amount of risk. And then you're splitting hairs between a meal plan or tracking. Both carry risk.
Yeah, I'd probably agree with that, actually, Alex. Yeah, I would agree with that. I think everyone's probably going to agree that non-tracking carries the lowest degree of risk. It's typically got the lowest amount of parameters. It typically has lowest effort cost or burden. It typically has the most flexibility involved in it. You know, it depends on how it's approached, of course, but if we have just guidelines within our non-tracking approach, really how you end up doing it doesn't matter. And I think there's a lot of that to tracking as well in flexible diet. It's like, doesn't matter what you eat as long as you hit the numbers. But you know, there's more of a likelihood of people becoming neurotic and all or nothing with those numbers. And then I think the biggest drawback to tracking is that it relies on external metrics to regulate food intake, and people lose that confidence in their own intuition around food. And then they build up this fear of what might happen if I stop tracking. And you hear people say things like, oh, you know, I'm so good at tracking now, it's just 2 minutes out of my day. Like, if I stopped tracking, I would just eat heaps, so I just continue to track. And they act like it's all hunky-dory, but they're kind of brushing under the carpet the negatives that it is impacting their life through, such as, like, a classic example is, I'm going to be less of a social person because it's going to be hard for me to track the meals that I eat when I socialize. And you might be able to track it, but how accurately? And then they might feel some anxiety around it. A stuff-up might lead to a binge or an all or nothing. So I think there's quite a big degree of risk with tracking that doesn't get the airtime that it deserves. And that is also why I would probably put tracking and meal plans on the same level, like you sort of mentioned or at least alluded to there, Alex.
Yeah. I'd say if you have predispositions to neuroticism, you have dichotomous thinking with things, you're basically picking your poison with the two. And I think an analogy that I've been sort of ruminating on for the last 6 months, really, when it comes to these things is, regardless of the model or modality that you choose, like, I liken them to like they have benefits, they have pros and they have cons, and any principle that we use in life when we're looking to improve in a certain area or grow will have benefits and risks associated with it, right? And it's no different with these things. So the role of a coach is like that of someone teaching someone to drive, right? When you're hopping in a car and you're getting behind a wheel, the benefit is it provides you with a lot of freedom and flexibility to be able to go places wherever you feel like and want to go when you feel like, better than that of like public transport. Whereas it carries some risk that you might get into a car accident or something like that. Yeah. So the pros associated with, you know, learning to drive is you get the freedom and the ability to drive everywhere, right? But the risks associated, you can get in a car accident and there's a varying degree of risks, right? Minor accident, you're up for a couple of hundred bucks for a fender bender. Major accident, you die, right? So we have a spectrum of risks associated with driving. The role of an instructor is to safely guide someone and make them aware of these risks so they are able to navigate effectively using that mode of transport, right? And that's the role of a good coach when it comes to nutrition, is to be able to safely aware the person that they're teaching to use this mode of nutritional transportation and navigate the risks associated with it so that way they can effectively start doing it on their own, right? So like having a driving instructor with you eventually stops, so too does your use and reliance of meal plans and macro tracking should have an end date and should cease, and you should be able to start navigating these things on your own.
The coaches that are listening to this, it's also just because, like you just said, being a good coach does not mean that you, just because you track macros or whoever does, doesn't mean you just give everyone that same thing and you're like, oh, well, I can do it, you can too. You don't have to, you know, you just have that flexibility and you can do this. It's like, no, you have to meet the people with where they're at. And like you, thinking about that, taking the consideration of the person who's coming on board, who they are, you know, like what type of job they do. And if it's their main job, that actually, that can give you an idea of what type of person they are too, you know, like, are they more analytical? Are they someone who's, you know, not as analytical? And then also like doing some fact finding when you take a client on board to discover more about them. So you can actually make sure the modality that you're going to give them is actually going to suit them. Because again, given a mom who's got three kids, who's running around all the time, trying to make them track their macros, like, exactly like you do when you're a single person, you know, you've got no kids, you've got all the freedom in the world, is not going to be as applicable. And again, you could be setting them up down the wrong path.
And this is a perfect segue to the next point, right? So it's like, what determines what intervention you use? We've got like literacy being a big point. Mac, you're going to go into no doubt some other some other things as well. So do you want to talk about the variables that you would consider?
So when it comes to choosing a particular nutrition strategy or approach for a given individual trying to pursue a given goal, the way I like to look at it from a zoomed out perspective is start with the golden behavior criteria. And literacy is a component of it. So the golden behavior criteria, for those who don't know, is do they want to do it? So that's a preference thing. If someone doesn't want to do it, doesn't matter if they're suited to it, it's not going to probably be adhered to. Are they willing and able to do it? So that's a literacy thing is part of that. If they don't have the literacy, then they're not able to do it rather. Okay. But it also might be things like they're busy, like Carson said, three kids, you know, blah, 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 blah. And then worthwhile. So is it worthwhile for them? For really modest goals, where they're having two meat pies, you know, for breakfast, it's probably not worthwhile them going to full tracking. If they only want to lose a couple of kilos, and we can probably achieve that just by getting, you know, a more superior health-seeking breakfast rather than the two meat pies, then it's probably not going to be worthwhile tracking. So I think these are the three points that we want to have at the top of or front of mind. There is branches within that, obviously, but it really sort of comes down, I think, just to simplify it, if you think about these three points, it can be used as a checklist or a criteria to try and assess whether someone is appropriate for a particular approach at a given point in time.
Yeah, I think that's a big one, and I agree.
I think also with that, though, like, you know, when we talk about nutritional literacy and why it matters, I personally still think, you know, empowering people to understand, like, even though they may not have to track 100%, to help them understand what an actual, like, what a protein is, what a carbohydrate is, what a fat is, what a mixed meal looks like, what that should look like on a plate is quite important, whether or not they have a few kilos to lose or whether they have a lot of weight to lose. Because at the end of the day, you know, we teach them certain principles where it's like, all right, they may not need to fully track. We're going to help them swap their meal here. If they don't have that understanding, I still feel like, you know, with them going through life onwards, they may not always, you know, they may fall into different habits that they might not understand. They're like, oh, but I was doing this before, how come I can't do this now, or whatever it is. When having just an understanding of, again, of the simple nutrition literacy, so like I said, the nutrition fundamentals, so they can competently be able to look after themselves in the rest of their life and know that, you know, oh, why should I be eating five servings of vegetables, or what does that actually look like? So they know, just again, for their overall health, it's going to benefit them too. So that's why I think teaching them, whether it be from, you know, the nutritional food guides that we have and things like that are going to overall going to benefit someone because they can understand food better. And, you know, when you have a better understanding of something, it just, it helps that autonomy, I guess you would say.
To be Mr. Devil's advocate and throw a bit of a, maybe a rebuttal, maybe not the right word, but you know what I'm saying. At that, I would argue or raise the point of, to achieve this knowledge that tracking provides us, do we need to do tracking? Can it be achieved in a way, and tracking is a great way to do it, but can it be achieved in other ways? And if it can be achieved in other ways, we would it be worthwhile exposing someone to the risks that tracking brings? Because there are risks associated with tracking, and many would argue that they can be negated or they're overplayed or whatever. I'm not getting into that, but there are risks. So if we don't have to expose someone to those risks, even just a greater preoccupation with food or thinking of food as numbers and data, like that could even be a risk that could potentially start to send someone down a dark path. If someone doesn't need to be exposed to any risk, if it's just not worth it, and we can achieve the same level of nutrition literacy accumulation without tracking, then maybe let's not be exposed to the risk, even if it's small risk. What do you think about that?
Well, that's actually why I said about the nutritional guidelines, because it doesn't matter so much about, you know, having to track. It's more about just helping them get the education to understand, again, what a serving size looks like. So that doesn't have to be tracking, but like, you know,
there's some form of quantification. Yeah.
Or just as coaches, you know, like I think like what a lot of coaches don't do, they don't have resources for clients. You know, they give them their numbers. They tell them they've got to do this. They got X, Y, and Z. Okay, go for it. But it's like, you know, with the infographics and stuff that are posted on Instagram or like, you know, things that I've provided my clients, like, hey, here's what, you know, again, here's what 100 grams of protein looks like on a plate, or here's what a serving of veggies is. Because you could ask someone, hey, what's a serving of veggies? They're like, oh, like they couldn't tell you that it's, you know, 75. Exactly. You know, like people don't actually know that. And so having resources doesn't have to be tracking, but something that is actually educating the client is what is most important here. So you're right, Mac, 100%. We, you know, at the end of the day, we want to have like a risk-free way to be able to educate people. And there's going to be different ways to go about that, but providing resources from possibly each modality based on what the client would be willing to do, or, you know, was going to be best suited for them. I think just having those resources there, again, whether it be the nutritional guidelines, creating your own resources, or if that person is inclined to track those certain things, just so they get an idea about, you know, what's in food overall too.
Yeah, for sure. I think that's a great way of putting it. And just to loop back to what Alex said, like there's always going to be some level of risk. But I think it's about only taking risks that are worthwhile.
Yeah.
And if you don't need to take a risk, then don't take it. So that's, I guess, my problem with people who are like, all my clients get macro tracking. It's like for a lot of those clients, it might not be worthwhile them taking that risk. They've got, the goal might not be high level enough. They might have existing habits and behaviors that require attention first and foremost. It might not be therefore worthwhile. Or potentially they might even be at risk of disordered eating disorders or even display those tendencies already. And then lobbing in macro tracking where we're viewing foods as numbers and data and hitting certain targets precisely. That's just like, okay, so someone's on the edge of falling down that into that, you know, dark path. We're just going to shove them right off the edge. We're not just going to push them. We're just going to shove them.
So to that point as well, I agree with Tyson's sentiment of I'd want to have some form of tracking experience, but I would want to have that not as a starting point. I would want to have that. And this isn't something for a fit pro or like a PT or anything like that. This would be a graduation criteria piece of mind that I would have as an accredited nutrition professional. So registered nutritionist, accredited sports nutritionist, accredited practicing dietitian, I would have safely navigating a period of tracking food quantitatively for, you know, 2 to 3 months, something like that. And then transitioning away from that, I would have that as a bit of a graduation framework from like, all right, if this person finishes up with me, I'm happy with that. Like I know that they've learned a fair bit about food, but that would be one component of a graduation framework that would probably consist of about 8 other things that I would be looking for as well. So it's definitely something that I'd want to have a client have experience with me at some point in time. but it's not necessarily something I would start with. But I think they are useful. And I think when implemented well, where it is worthwhile, where the predispositions don't expose them to unnecessary risk, then and you can effectively and appropriately transition away from them with the correct supervision, then they're a good thing that can form part of an effective graduation from your services framework.
I also think with nutritional literacy, though, it's like, again, you know, we talk about, I was just saying before, you know, knowing about your servings of veggies or your serving sizes with your proteins and things like that, which is fine. But what about like, you know, helping people understand nutritional literacy? What does that look like in a day or a week or a month where it's like, it's not just going back to people getting too caught up in the plants and protein and it's no fun or whatever that looks like. It's like, you know, when we look at a macro area, like a bigger time frame with nutritional literacy, you should be able to look and think about your overall diet, let's say, and there still is fun in there because, you know, having that nutrition literacy means that you know it's okay that you have enjoyable meals and going out and seeing friends and stuff like that, or knowing what hunger cues look like and how to make sure you're satisfied but not stuffed. You know, do you actually know when to stop eating, or are you like, are you internally having good hunger cues and satiety cues? So I think all that actually comes under nutritional literacy too, but a lot of people pass over that and we get caught up thinking about, again, you know, what's on your plate or what needs to be within a day, numbers wise, quantitatively, without thinking about all those other things that do play factors in just overall health and well-being.
Yeah,
I think that was a really good point. And I think what that comes back down to is, number one, thinking about nutrition as a game of average trends over time, or behaviors and choices, habits performed over a long period of time, or a macro time scale, like you sort of, that term you used there, Tyson, which I thought was quite nice. And then also rejecting the idea of foods being good or bad, and rather viewing foods for their intended purpose, and understanding that social meals, indulgences, they bring benefit to total health, but in different ways to what, say, for example, a meal of Chobani yogurt, Wheat Bix, fruit, and nut butter would bring.
Mm. Yeah.
I think, you know, to that point as well, based on my own experience, and this could be completely wrong, but developing qualitative literacy as opposed to quantitative literacy tends to be a bit slower clinically with clients. So like, you know, understanding, moving away from dichotomous and rigid approaches takes longer than learning how many grams of protein is in nuts. The feedback loop is longer and slower. You're not getting that instant feedback that you do get when you're tracking quantitatively. So moving away from things like that, understanding appetite, understanding hunger cues, understanding your physiological responses to your appetite and how your body responds physiologically to your hunger cues as well. Like basic, you know, like when we're talking about things like energy, fatigue, thirst, hunger, and then also like weight regulation in relation to those cues, like that takes a lot of time. And that's why those things, you know, coming back to like a graduation framework, again, the accredited people, your graduation framework should be very balanced between qualitative and quantitative criteria, for sure.
And that was the biggest thing. Like one of the things you said there, it's like, yeah, 100%. Where the person is in their journey, I guess, you know, like, even though I said thinking about hunger cues and stuff like that, well, it's like, well, yeah, if you are dieting, then guess what? Being hungry is going to be a part of that. So it's not thinking that that's a bad thing either. So I guess, you know, thinking about those things with the modalities, like a lot of teaching, certain educational things come when the person is either finished a dieting phase, you know, with certain things like that, or again, they're out of a calorie deficit, they are taking care of their sleep, they're getting some good health habits in place. Otherwise, like a lot of those things can be unregulated for the most part because of just, you know, life stress, dieting, and other things that could be playing a part.
One thing that I wanted to add, because I think this, there's sort of like a cognitive dissonance and cognitive bias associated with prep, where it's sort of this like self-righteous get out of jail free card to do with like these behaviors. And it's like,
so you're getting trouble from your missus.
Well, not just that, where it's like, oh, you know, I know these things are bad, but I'm in prep. Therefore, it's okay that I'm doing them because I want to get in shape and I want to be a world champion. And that's what's required to be a world champion. And it's like, well, no, what's required is resistance training, an energy deficit, and like maintaining, like trying to maintain as best a positive or as less a negative protein balance as possible. Because for the majority of these people, they're in a negative protein balance when they've been dieting for chronic periods of time anyway. Weighing that thing to the exact gram, tracking the calories in your gum, tracking the calories in your diet sodas and stuff, like, I'm sorry, that those behaviors aren't conducive to you because you're a physique athlete or in becoming a world champion, because the world champions 9 times out of 10 aren't doing that and never did.
It's a really good point. It's like, okay, if you're going to have such a high level goal, you know, oh yes, we need such high degrees of precision. We got to track really accurately. And like, I see that argument make a lot of sense, but it's like the people who are actually winning often don't do any of that shit.
No, they train like shit too. They're genetic elite for a reason.
Bodybuilders, yeah,
it's pretty funny actually, but not just bodybuilders, like athletes in general, right?
Yeah, dude, in general, look at
surfers. My research is in surfers, and I go on Instagram, I see some, you know, top 10 pro, and he's training with old mate down at Coolangatta, and it's just like, this is literally like, I'm not a PT anymore, and compared to other people, my knowledge of strength and conditioning training is really shit. But like, just simple logic would know that that is just ridiculous and nothing is being achieved except for a freaking hot Instagram video.
Yeah. I think the main point though is that just because you're doing it doesn't mean that it's okay to do these behaviors and that you're going to get rewarded for these behaviors and that the risks associated with the behaviors are not worth considering for you. And for, I would argue and probably suggest that the golden triangle should be amended for a prep. Because, and if it were and implemented well, we would see prep approaches change drastically between the two sort of predominant archetypes that we see with like rigid meal plans or rigid, you know, tracking associated with that. Because I mean, God, like the DCA, like the discretionary calorie allowance with variation in foods is 5 to 10% anyway. So even if you're tracking everything 100% and it's this, like it's out by 5 to 10% anyway.
I also think with that though, like as much as we can try and, you know, like I said, Alex, if that was to happen, I still think at the end of the day, those people will always self-justify what they're doing, no matter what, you know, they've chosen that path. And it's like, if that's what they want to do, they can, if they made that decision for themselves and they know the risks, they know all those things and they know they're doing the wrong things, that's fine. But it's like, you cannot then go and show what you're doing as health promoting or anything like that. Because at the end of the day, it's like, these people know that, again, it's not healthy and they're like, oh, but I'm doing this to be the best. Okay, fine. But do not share what you're doing with other people, because you are then teaching, I guess, you know, negative outcomes to people who look up to these people.
Yeah. Or even just say like, this isn't healthy. You know, this isn't a healthy sport. Therefore, these behaviors aren't healthy, you know, but I'm still doing it and get behind it with me. And if you want to work with me, this is what you need to do. Because like that in and of itself is negligent.
Yeah.
I think we've got to respect people's like values, and if they value doing something, or even if they're doing something, got to be trying to be empathetic to their drivers and respect their interests and everything and all that shit. But yeah, I would agree there. It's like, if they're not being transparent about, you know, I think the other thing is a lot of their motive to do it might not be coming from a place of, you know, all the Shannon Beer shit, like the, you know, wanting to, you know, not reward yourself, but give back to yourself, or, you know, self-improvement, all that sort of stuff. And it might come from a place of comparison or inadequacy or punishment and these sort of things. And I think there's a lot of brushing that under the carpet as well, which, you know, I guess it makes sense. Like, people don't really want to be open about that when they're trying to create this persona of, look how lean I am, look how great I am, look how motivated I am, like it's all hunky-dory, I'm doing my prep, and, you know, I should inspire you and everything. So I get that too.
I would just say to wrap up, like, I just think those, like, it came up because I segued into the fact that people in comp prep tend to say these behaviors are okay because I am in comp prep, therefore it is acceptable and the risks are acceptable. And then some coaches go out there saying, hey, it's not healthy, but nothing about comp prep is. But that doesn't mean that you shouldn't be pursuing for it to be healthier than it currently is and improve the current standards and make people more aware than just by saying it's not healthy, therefore expose yourself to all of this risk.